right. I'm going to start with the assignment. Could you just remind your fellow church members to come to church next week? This is something. We're just going to assume that most everyone is on vacation who is not here. We're going to think good of them. And then if they don't come next week, we're going to publicly and privately rebuke them, right? All right. I'm going to tell you something actually is really sweet that I just saw. When Christy was playing, I just happened to look over at her siblings, and they were, in this moment, Rachel, they were smiling at their sister, and they were pleased and happy for her as she was doing well. And that is a wonderful thing to see. I know it might not always be like that at home, but in this moment, praise God, it was good. And Carly was very happy for her sister at the end, and that's always nice to see. All right, I told you that I am very excited for this series on Judges. I love the Old Testament. I love the narratives. I loved all the goofy things that are going on and the nuances of the Bible. But I love Judges because it is filled with ups and downs, but it's filled with some like real biblical men, masculine, godly men. Now, there's also some ungodly ones in there, but there are some godly men, and we're going to look at one of those today, and I'm excited because Judges is just chaos, and I want you to hear something multiple times. It's kind of hard to put dates on the Judges period. You can put them on just the book, but really, Eli and Samuel are also kind of judges, although they're outside of the book of Judges. So generally, Judges covers 430 to 450 years, somewhere in there. Now you think about that, when we're talking about the Bible, that doesn't sound like a lot, but put that in the context of America, that's almost double the length of our country in existence, right? I mean, it's a little bit less, but that is a long time to be without a king or a ruler, kind of this juxtaposition of having at times somebody, a man or even a woman, who's in charge of the nation and leading it, and then times where just nobody's doing right. In fact, the phrase you probably know that is repeated over and over again in the book of Judges is, every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And that is the perfect description of this atrocious time period. But so there's these super low lows where it's just like everyone's wicked and doing abominations. But then there are these super high highs where a man of God or a woman of God rises up, does what is right, and the whole nation repents. And then new generations come. They're not good about passing on their faith from one generation to another. That's really the problem of Judges. And it should be a good warning for us. All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to go backwards before we can go forward. So I'm going to start by just refreshing some things for you. And I want to read for you a passage. Tell you what, if you want to turn there, that's fine. But Numbers chapter 33 is where we're going to start. So Numbers 33, and all the children who are in here, this is going to be a great Sunday school time for you, all right? And to prove it, I know you're going to listen so well, so we're going to do at the end of the month, notes for floats, okay? So here's what I want. I want you to take notes 3 weeks. Keep your notes at the end of the month. If you can show me notes from 3 weeks, root beer floats. All right, for the kids, Miss Shirley. She's all excited. All right, so I want to read Numbers 33, verse 50. This is a prophecy. The Lord spake unto Moses in the plains of Moab by Jordan near Jericho, saying, "Speak unto the children of Israel, say unto them, when you pass over Jordan into the land of Canaan, then ye shall drive out the inhabitants of the land before you and destroy all their pictures, destroy all their molten images, and quite pluck down all their high places. And you shall dispossess the inhabitants of the land and dwell therein. For I have given you the land to possess it. And you shall divide the land by lot for an inheritance among your families. And to the more you shall give the more inheritance. To the fewer you shall give the less inheritance. Every man's inheritance shall be in the place where his lot falleth. According to the tribes of your fathers, you shall inherit. All right, the book of Judges, as I said, is severe failure of the people. They trusted at times, then they failed to trust the Lord, and it led them into this sin cycle. And I think in your bulletin, I put the sin cycle in there for you. Sorry, it didn't quite print perfectly. But the sin cycle is really important. It's just repeated over and over and over and over again, right? So they go into the land. They take the land, but Israel sin, and they sin against God. And after they sin against God, God sends an oppressor. And this oppressor comes in, whether it be the Philistines or the Canaanites or the Perizzites or the Hittites or the Canaanites, I don't know if I said them yet, or all the other ites. They come in and they oppress Israel and put them under bondage. And they're under bondage sometimes for 7 years, sometimes for 10, sometimes for 40, sometimes for 80 years. It's like they're slaves again. Maybe not as bad as Egypt, but similar. And then finally, they've had enough of the punishment and the oppression, so they cry out to God, and God sends a judge, a deliverer, and He delivers them, and they have rest for a little bit of time, and then the next judge comes, or the next failure of the people comes, and they cry out again. They go through the whole cycle over and over again. What's interesting is that Judges is actually kind of written according to the regional judgments that are going on, or the regional oppressions that are happening. And we're going to highlight that, right? They have a Canaanite oppression. They have a Philistine oppression. And for the most part, each one is just once. And then a new ite moves in, a new Amorite or Hittite or Perizzite moves in and takes over. And they conquer that one. And then a new one moves in there. And they just go through this cycle over and over again. All right, so let's go now to Judges 1. We'll read a little bit, then we're going to go back to Numbers and back to Joshua, come back to Judges. We're going to move around just a little bit. This is really setting the scene for the entire book of Judges. And if I say Joshua in place of Judges or Judges in place of Joshua, just forgive me. They're so close, they're right next to each other, and it's kind of the same area, the same happenings. All right, so just read with me, Judges, I almost did it there, Judges 1, verse 1. Now after the death of Joshua, it came to pass that the children of Israel asked the Lord, saying, "Who shall be first to go up for us against the Canaanites to fight against them?" Generally, the Canaanites is just kind of everyone. Sometimes it's a more specific group. Generally, it's everyone. Verse 2. And the Lord said, "Judah shall go up. Indeed, I have delivered the land into their hands." Now think about what God just said. I have delivered the land into their hands. They very quickly forget this. Everyone forgets this. The Lord delivered. Now, this is on the back of 7 years, 7.5 years of battle under Joshua, where they drive a wedge through the middle of the land, and they clear out the southern half, and then they clear out the northern half. And then they go back to the central, they divide the land up and go to their own land. They've already conquered all the major armies. There's just pockets of people, tribes that are left that need to be conquered. No more massive armies. They've all been thoroughly stomped and purged from the area of battle. But there's still people. But God says, "I have delivered the land into their hand." Now listen. Judah does it better than anyone. And we're going to see that at the end. Verse 3. So Judah said to Simeon his brother, "Come up with me to my allotted territory that we may fight against the Canaanites, and I will likewise go with you to your allotted territory." And Simeon went with him. Then Judah went up, and the Lord delivered the Canaanites and the Perizzites into their hand, and they killed 10,000 men at Bezek. And they found Adoni Bezek in Bezek and fought against him, and they defeated the Canaanites and the Perizzites. Then Adoni Bezek fled, and they pursued him and caught him and cut off his thumbs and his big toes. And Adoni Bezek said, 70 kings with their thumbs and big toes cut off, used to gather scraps under my table, as I have done. Notice what he says, so God has repaid me. Then they brought him to Jerusalem, and there he died. Now the children of Judah fought against Jerusalem and took it. They struck it with the edge of the sword and set the city on fire. And afterwards the children of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites who dwelt in the mountains in the south and in the lowlands. Then Judah went against the Canaanites who dwelt in Hebron. Now the name of Hebron was formerly Kirjath Arba, and they killed Sheshai, Ahiman, and Telmai. From there they went up against the inhabitants of Debir. The name of Debir was formerly Kirjath Sefer. We'll just stop there now. I know that that might seem like a lot of names and a lot of people. So I have for you a map. Who likes maps? I love maps. I didn't give you the map now until now because I didn't want you looking at it until now. But these two men are going to hand out the maps. This is a very specific map to the book of Judges. And so as you get this map, go ahead and study it. I'm going to keep talking. You can study it. But it's a good map, and we're going to kind of walk through. I want you to see with your eyes what God is doing. Since we don't have PowerPoint or anything, we're doing it the old-fashioned way. That way, kids, you keep the map. I would like you to bring the map back next week and the week after that. It's a good map. Write on the map if you need to write on the map. Draw the routes on the map if you want to draw the routes on the map. I'll try to explain them as we go along. But this map specifically is demonstrating to us where the Israelites had already conquered the armies, yet there were remaining people that needed to be conquered. So as you see the map, on the map, you're going to notice the 12 tribes and the general area that they are allotted. I almost gave you one with all the lines of each area, but then you wouldn't have known where all the ites were, the Canaanites, the Amorites. So just notice, starting at the bottom, we're going to have Simeon at the very bottom. The tribe of Simeon gets the lowest region. And off to their left, you see this infamous area known as Gaza, right? Gaza, Ashkelon. Above them, the Amorites are still there. Next to the Amorites, the Hivites are there. That's also where the another ite, I'll think of it in a minute, is located there. The Canaanites are up. Canaanites are located along the coastal region in the Sharon Plain. Canaanites up in the Jezreel Valley, that region that kind of squeezes all the way to the Jordan. Canaanites above there. You've got Makkah and Gezer up above the Sea of Galilee. On the eastern side, you have the Ammonites, Undernite. You have the Moabites down in the southeast region. So they're kind of surrounded, but there's pockets all through there. So some of these people still need to fight for their land. And the task is really left to each tribe. Judah as a tribe is responsible for clearing out their land. And that shouldn't be too hard. I don't have the numbers on me, but if you go to the book of Numbers, you can see how big each tribe was. Judah was one of the larger ones. They had, I don't remember exactly, 40,000, 60,000 fighting men. So it's not a big deal for them to go clear the land out, or shouldn't be. And so here we have the first battle that's listed. And they go and they ask Simeon to help them. God doesn't say that's wrong. As they ask Simeon, they make a deal. I help you, you help me, and we're just going to clear out our land together. And Simeon agrees to it. And so they begin to go to task. Notice Judah, if you look just above Judah, you see Jerusalem. If you want to star Jerusalem or draw a circle around Jerusalem, you can. But just take note, Jerusalem will not be the capital for about 500 years. It's not the capital here, and it's barely even mentioned in our story. But whenever you're looking at a map of Israel, just find Jerusalem and work out from there. So notice west of Jerusalem, you have the Hivites and the Amorites listed. Now Judah needs to begin to clear out the land. In the first place that he's fighting against this man called Adoni, or he's fighting at Adoni Bezek. And this man has been wicked. This man has himself conquered 70 kings. And when he catches them, he cuts their thumbs off and he cuts their big toes off. There's significance to that. If you don't have your big toes, you're really going to struggle running. They're the most important part of balance. So without your big toes, you're not going to be very agile. And without your thumbs, you're not going to hold a sword. So these men, these kings, have become now pawns for him, trophies for him. He's caused them to be useless in battle at this point, and he kind of marches them around. Well, now the Israelites do the very same thing to him. He's a wicked king. And he even recognizes that he's wicked and that the Lord has given victory because he states it. He states that God has punished him, that God is superior, that God has, as he says in verse 7, repaid me for my wickedness. And so they kill the Canaanites and they kill the Perizzites in this region. They capture the leader. And we sometimes, critics of the Bible will say, listen, this was so harsh. Why is God just, God is a harsh God of the Old Testament. He's just slaughtering whole people groups. God has warned them for years, more than 40 years, that they should change their ways, that they should repent. And some have. We're going to read about one in a moment. They've repented and they've joined Israel. Not joined Israel, let me rephrase it. They've joined Jehovah. But the ones who are still here fighting, they're fighting against Jehovah. And this king is wicked. He doesn't worship God. He hates God. He's an idolater. And yet here in this moment, he's had to admit that God is the one true God. Well, he goes to Jerusalem. He dies there. Very little is said about what happens in Jerusalem, but Judah and Simeon go up and collectively attack and burn and purify Jerusalem. Now, I read for you as we began Numbers. And Numbers 33, God gave very specific directions. When you go in and hear whatever, here's a small town and it's got, let's say, 10 houses. You go into the houses, you remove all idolatry, all images. You destroy them, you burn them. If they have a mountain above them and at the top of the mountain there's a grove where they worship false idols, you go to that grove and you destroy it. You destroy all the idols, you wipe it clean. They get to keep the house, but none of the wickedness. That's what they're supposed to do. And as we read through Judges, what do we read over and over again? Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And so here they're to cleanse the land of wickedness, of people who are wicked and the wicked ways of the people. And so Judah begins. They clear out the land. I'm going to have you jump down a little ways if you would. If you would go down to verse 17. Judges 1, verse 17. It says, also Judah took Gaza with its territory, Ashkelon with its territory, Ekron with its territory. So the Lord was with Judah, and they drove out the mountaineers. Sad words. But they could not drive out the inhabitants of the lowland because they had chariots of iron. So they fail. They fail to do what God had called them to do. They take most of the land of Canaan, but not the lowlands where the chariots are. They drive out the mountaineers. That does not mean that these men have picks with long beards and they're yodeling up in the mountains. Not those type of mountaineers, right? These are just mountain-dwelling warriors. And we're going to read about some of them in a moment. Now let me ask you, are the chariots and are the mountaineers too strong for the Lord? Did not God say, I will drive out the inhabitants of the land? So where's the failure? Is it with God? Is it with the people? It's obviously with the people. Because right smack dab in the middle of this story is Caleb. And what does Caleb do? He drives out the mountaineers. Let me rephrase that. He doesn't drive out the mountaineers. He slaughters the mountaineers. And so we have this, in the middle of Judges 1, we have this wonderful parenthesis of what a man of God should be doing. And I think God starts this book with Caleb on purpose. This isn't the first time we've seen Caleb. In fact, if you went backwards to Numbers chapter 34, he's chosen as one of the tribal leaders who's going to go into the promised land and march through the promised land and figure out where they should go in and spy it out, how they could attack, where they could find wells so they could stop as a nation, how they're going to go in and divide the land up. That was his job. His job was not, this is what we think sometimes, his job was not go in and look, is it really a land flowing with milk and honey? Is what God said really true? That wasn't his job as a spy. His job was, yeah, he was going to discover that in the process, but his job was to spy. And spies have to gather information. Where should they attack? What cities were strongholds? Where was their water? Where was their food? Where were the herds that they could take to feed the people? How could they go in and win a battle? Right? They weren't just there to make sure that the grapes were this long. All right. A few of you got that. Okay. Do we need to sing the song? No. Okay. Josh Spink says no. Good. All right. So Caleb goes in and he goes in. He's listed there. He's listed in Numbers. He's listed also in Joshua chapter 14. In fact, everything we're about to read was already covered in Joshua 14. So why is God bringing it up again? Because of the verse that we just read about Judah. Judah goes in and they did 90% of the job. But they failed 10. And Judah was the best one. And yet here you have Caleb. And so let's read about Caleb in verse 12. Then Caleb said, "Whoever attacks Kirjath-Sefer and takes it, to him I will give my daughter Aksa as wife, and Othniel, who will be the first judge, Othniel the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, took it. So he gave him his daughter Aksa as wife. Now it happened when she came to him that she urged him to ask her father for a field, and she dismounted from her donkey, and Caleb said to her, 'What do you wish?' So she said to him, 'Give me a blessing, since you have given me land in the south, give me also springs of water.' And Caleb gave her the upper springs and the lower springs. Now the children of the Kenite, Moses' father-in-law, went up from the city of Palms with the children of Judah in the wilderness of Judah, which lies in the south near Arad. And they went and dwelt among the people. And Judah went with his brother Simeon, and they attacked the Canaanites." And so you have this explanation. By the way, Caleb, if you know from Joshua, Caleb is a descendant of the Kenites. He's a Kenite. He's not even actually Jewish by blood. He's Moses' father-in-law's relative. And yet he gets absorbed into the nation of Israel during their wanderings. And by the time they go to search out the land, he's so noble among the people that they choose him as one of the tribal leaders to go in. And he does such a good job leading and reporting as a spy that 40 years later, he's still a tribal leader and he's receiving his inheritance before anyone else. He's a faithful man, not even Jewish, by birth. He's absorbed into the Jewish nation because he agrees that Jehovah God deserves the worship. And so now his relatives come to fight with him. Well, he wins the land. In fact, if we were to go to Joshua, Joshua gives us a very steady or a clear account of his devotion. Joshua 14, I'll just read it to you if you don't want to turn there. "Then the children of Judah came to Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said to him, 'You know the word which the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me in Kadesh Barnea.'" Kadesh Barnea is way down in the wilderness. It's the wandering area. "I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought back word to him as it was in my heart." I love that. Caleb worshipped God with his heart. That's why he was a good spy. That's why he was faithful. Everyone else says, "Oh, our hearts are melting. There's giants in the land." And what does Caleb say? Remember that one hill that had all those giants on it? I want that one. And he does. After he gives his faithful report, he gets the promise from Moses that he'll receive that land. After they enter into the promised land and have 7 years of battle, Caleb now is 80 years old, and Caleb says, I was promised that mountain. I wonder what that would have done with everyone. Now, I'm pretty sure that Caleb had quite the reputation at this time, right? I want to imagine that as Caleb walks around as an 80-year-old man who really hasn't aged too much because God preserved them during their wandering, at this point, at the time of entering in, he would have been 80. At the time of the allotment, he would have been 87. And when he shows up and says, I want that land, everyone's like, yeah, 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 give it to him. Give it to him. I'd like to think that that happened. Now, let's be honest. Caleb's old. He's 87. And so he says, I want someone to go with me. And he must have had a really younger daughter, right? Because he says, I'll give you my daughter as wife. I would have to think she was either a widow or very young. Unmarried would receive the inheritance through Caleb. And so Caleb's brother's son, Caleb's nephew, promises to go, and his name is Othniel. And they go and they spy out the land. Now I want you to see something. Going back to Judges 1. Why is it this one king gets mentioned? Right? Bezek. They go to Bezek. It's not on your map, I don't think. Shouldn't be on your map. It's not on my map either. And here in Bezek, they find Adonai Bezek. And Adonai Bezek is a ruthless man. And they fight against him, take his land, and they move to the next mountain. Verse 10, then Judah went against the Canaanites who dwelt in Hebron. Now the name of Hebron was formerly Kirjath Arba, and they killed Sheshai, Ahiman, and Talmai. Now listen, Kirjath, let me get the name right. Kirjath Arba used to be Hebron. And there's kind of some famous giants that lived in Kirjath Arba, known as the Sons of Anak. And from the Sons of Anak is who dwell on that mountain that Caleb will take. And from the Sons of Anak comes another famous giant years later, known as Goliath. These giants have left or been killed. Now, Goliath is from Gath, which is a little bit, if you look at your map, it's a little bit west of Hebron, west and south. But there's giants, warriors in the warrior men in these hills. And Caleb doesn't care. Now please note, Judah couldn't drive out the mountaineers, but Caleb did. And he takes Hebron. Not only Hebron, formerly known as Arba, or Kirjath Arba, the dwelling place of the Sons of Anak, but he also takes the next mountain after that. Or that Judah does. From there they went to the inhabitants of Debir. The name of Debir was formerly Kirjath Sepher. All right, I'm belaboring this point. Why? Caleb takes what has been given to Caleb by God. And he's the only one. We're going to see that in just a moment. And I want you to notice, though, what Caleb does. He's appealed for the land. He's fought for the land. He renames it Hebron, which means seat of association or place of fellowship, a place of communion. And he receives the land. He receives the land of Arba. He's killed the giants, him and Othniel. It was the strongest city of the promised land. This is the region, right? When the 12 spies get back, 10 spies bad, 2 spies good. When they get back and they give a report, what do they say? There are giants. We're like grasshoppers in their sight. We can't do anything about them. And Caleb says, I'll take care of them. You give me that area, I'll take care of them. And he does. 47 years later, he keeps his promise, drives them out. Why? Because Caleb measured the strength of the giants, not against his fellow tribesmen, but against God. And when he compares these sons of Anak, these giant, these warriors, these mountaineers, when he compares them against God, what are they? They're but grasshoppers. They're nothing. Caleb is bold in his faith. Joshua 14 tells us about that. Joshua 15, verse 13, his consecration is full. He knows what it's like to live among pagan people. Or at least his grandfathers did. He knows what it's like to not have the devotion of thousands or millions of believers around him. And he's not going back to that life. He has wholeheartedly committed himself to following Jehovah. And he never lowered his standard. It never wore out. He never gave in or backed off. It didn't matter that 47 years passed. It didn't matter that there were 10 spies speaking against him. He didn't care about the circumstances. It didn't matter that he was 87 years old. He was going to keep the word that he had given to God and that God had given to him. That's commitment. And so he drives out completely the inhabitants of the land, including three giant warriors. And Joshua 14, verse 15 says, "And the land had rest." I want you to think about that. As we go through that sin cycle, what is it that the people always wanted? They wanted rest. What does Canaan, what do we often call it? The promised land, land of rest. Where did Israel come from? Hundreds of years of bondage and slavery to a land of comfort and rest. And yet when they get here, Judah can't drive people out, and so there is no rest. Simeon can't drive people out, and there is no rest. And yet Caleb trusts the Lord, and what happens? There was rest in the land. Now when it says the land, he means that little region around Hebron. Notice where, did you find Hebron? I never told you how to find Hebron. If you go to Jerusalem and you go slightly southwest, you're going to find Bethlehem, then you're going to find Etam with a question mark, you're going to see Judah, then Beth-zur, the city of Beth-zur, and just below Beth-zur, you're going to see Hebron, Kiriath Arba. So there it is, Hebron, where he lived, the land that he had taken. The land, by the way, still today, known as some of the greatest vineyards in all of Israel, are right there in Hebron. The land with clusters that are full of grapes. And so he takes this land, drives out the inhabitants, including the three giant warriors. In fact, they're listed for us even. They get a name in the Bible. Judges 1, verse 11 names them. And they killed Sheshai, Ahiman, and Talmai. That's the extent of their existence in the Bible. They died. It stands in stark contrast to the rest of Israel. Israel could not drive out the Jebusites. Joshua 15 tells us that. Joshua 17, 13 says that it came to pass when the children of Israel were waxing strong that they put the Canaanites to tribute but did not utterly destroy them or utterly drive them out. And yet Caleb wholly followed the Lord. And so Caleb's daughter comes and asks. Four times, by the way, it says Caleb wholly, W-H-O-L-L-Y, wholly or completely followed the Lord. What a statement. Four times. You want? I'll give them to you. Numbers 14, 24. God said it again in Numbers 32, 12. He said it in Deuteronomy 1, verse 36. And Joshua 14, 14. Every aspect of Caleb's life was continually centered on the Lord. In simple faith, He trusted God, and it led to completed faith in Him. Can I ask you, how often does your faith fall short? We trust God, but not in simple faith to the end. We try to step in at times to help God, right? We get about 80 or 90% of the way, and they're like, well, I got the rest from here, God. I can take it. We try to adjust the plan at the last minute, fix our intent or fit our intent into what we want. We don't trust the Lord completely. Caleb does here. And I want you to just note real quick what he does with his inheritance. He gets a big allotment. He really does. Nobody wants it. There's giants. And so what does he do? He gets this large chunk of land, and immediately, what's his daughter do? What every daughter does. She asks for more. Right? I know you gave me this great farmland, but I could use a nice well or a spring. And what does Caleb do? What every loving father does. Gives her two springs. Right? So she comes and she wants this extra land. She wants this. By the way, it's an inheritance. She's getting it anyways. And he gives it to her. He doesn't need it. He completed what God had asked him to do. And so he gives it to her. He didn't ask for an army to come with him. He just asks for one person, Othniel. I also like that she's not afraid to ask for blessing. I think he's passed on his faith well. Caleb was not afraid to ask God for great things. Caleb could have said, I was a faithful warrior, Lord. I did all these things for you. And there's this allotment outside in the north side of Jerusalem, which we conquered a long time ago. Remember, Ai wiped it out. There's nobody there. No wicked inhabitants. I'll take that one, right? Retirement. This is my retirement plan. Give me the ease and the comfort and the palm trees and the beach. Well, there's no beach there. But he didn't ask for the area that was already cleared. He asked for the best piece that would require hard work. And he took it. And now his daughter comes in, rides in on her donkey, gets down and says, I would like some blessing too, Father. And he happily gives it to her. He did something else. Joshua 21 verse 10 tells us that he gave away Hebron. I think this is so wonderful. There are going to be 6 cities of refuge. I don't know if we'll talk about these or not. 6 cities where the Levites don't get inheritance. They don't get land. They get a city. And they're to live in that city. And from that city, they're to preach and to teach the commandments of the Lord to everyone around them. And the time comes for the first city, and the first city is going to be in Judah. The lot falls to Judah. And Caleb steps up and says, I'll give them Hebron. He gives away the best city, the biggest part of his inheritance, and he just gives it to the Levites. Joshua chapter 21, verse 10 to 12. And what's he do? He takes the suburb. Literally, he moves down the mountain and just takes a little plot of land. The simple faith of Caleb overflowed into other people's life. He desired that other people would wholly follow the Lord, that they would know the Lord. And he wanted to bless them, and so he gives it away. He gives it to the Kohathites, of the children of Aaron, of the children of Levi, for the lot, for theirs was first. But that's not how Judges 1 ends. We're going to wrap it up real quick. It's bad. 16 verses. We'll do it in rapid succession. We won't even read them all. You're going to get the picture very quickly. Read with me, starting in verse 21. But the children of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites who inhabited Jerusalem. So the Jebusites dwell with the children of Benjamin in Jerusalem to this day. And the house of Joseph also went up against Bethel. And the Lord was with them. This is Ephraim. He just, Manasseh and Ephraim, there's two sons of Joseph. He calls Ephraim the house of Joseph here. And the Lord was with them. So the house of Joseph sent men to spy out Bethel. The name of the city was formerly Luz. And when the spies saw a man coming out of the city, they said to him, "Please show us the entrance to the city, and we will show you mercy." So he showed them the entrance to the city, and they struck the city with the edge of the sword. But they let the man and all his family go. And the man went to the land of Hittites, built the city, and called its name Luz, which is the name to this day. So they let a guy go, and what's he do? Builds a fortified city, wicked city, that will now fight against, and they will, against Israel. However, Manasseh did not drive out the inhabitants of Bethshan and its villages, and Tanakh and its villages, and the inhabitants of Dor and its villages, and the inhabitants of Ibleam and its villages, and the inhabitants of Megiddo and its villages. Shall I go on, or do we get the picture? It goes just the next one, verse 29. Nor did Ephraim drive out the Canaanites who dwelt in Gezer. So the Canaanites dwelt in Gezer among them. Verse 30. Nor did Zebulun drive out the inhabitants of Kitron and the inhabitants of Nahalal. Verse 30, 31. Nor did Asher drive out the... Do you get the picture? It goes down through all of these. Zebulun failed. Asher failed. Naphtali failed. Dan was a miserable failure, and they're going to come back at the end of Judges and fail epically for the whole nation to see. None of them drive out the inhabitants of the land. And so the stage is now set. The problem of the tribe's weak faith will progress. They didn't purify the land. They didn't purify themselves. Now listen, we started by reading Numbers chapter 33. And I want you to go back to the book of Numbers while we end. Numbers 33. We read the beginning, Numbers 33, and God pronounces that they should go to the land, they should take it, they should remove all the images, they should remove all the idols, they should destroy the places of worship. They get to keep all the houses, all the crops, all the animals, all the riches, all the gold. They get to keep everything for themselves, but drive the people out. Either kill them if they won't leave, or drive them out. And what would happen if they don't? Numbers 33, verse 55. But if you will not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall come to pass that those which ye let remain of them shall be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and shall vex you in the land wherein you dwell. Moreover, it shall come to pass that I shall do unto you as I thought to do unto them. Prophesied before they ever even went into the promised land. That's the consequence. Our world does not like the word consequence. Trying to remove that. But there are consequences. There's consequences when we don't pursue the things that God encourages us to pursue. And here it is for Israel. You don't do it, they're going to be pricks in your eyes. They're going to be thorns in your flesh. They're going to vex you constantly. Maybe for like 430 to 450 years. And then if you still won't listen, I'm going to do what I told you I'd do to them. Now listen, 430 to 450 years, that's a long time. Generations come and go, don't they? But they're failing to pass the truth on to the next generation. And for that, there's a great parallel for us. In simple faith, Caleb believed God. He trusted that what God had promised, he would accomplish. And it didn't matter what mountain it was. It didn't matter what people it was. It didn't matter who was guarding it. It didn't matter how long it would take. It didn't matter if it was 47 years in the future. Caleb pursued the inheritance that God gave him, that God had promised him. And in simple faith, Caleb trusted the Lord. He didn't try to come up with his own plan. He didn't try to hurry God. He didn't try to twist things to get what he wanted when he wanted them. He simply accomplished what God had called him to do. His life is the prime example of what a theocracy should look like. And that's what Israel was at this time. A theocracy, meaning God is the... There's no president. There's no prime minister. There is God at the top. And as far as Caleb was concerned, he looked straight to the Lord for his direction. And that's how God intended it to be. Good promise here for us, because that's how it will be one day. In His kingdom, Jesus Christ will sit on the throne, and we will have no problem looking to Him. He will be the ruler. But that's how God intended it here. But Caleb's the only one who got it. Hebrews 6, verse 9 gives us a good, 6, 9 through 20 gives us a good parallel description. The entire focus of this passage is on God. It is the nature of God to pursue or be pursued in faithfulness. And so Caleb's focus is on the character of God and the character of God's promises. And that should be ours. And that's what Hebrews is getting after with its hall of faith. Your focus should be on the very character of God. Who cares how turbulent the world is around us? God's still in control. And it's been a pretty interesting week. God's still in control. God's promises will be accomplished. Oh, nations will rise and fall. People groups will turn from the Lord or turn back to Him. But what about you? Is God your king? Israel failed because they did not pass the truth on from one generation to another. I was recently asked, I don't even remember when I was asked this, but I was asked, what is like my number one goal in life overall? And for some reason, I've been thinking about this lately. In fact, I know it was sparked because I'm doing premarital counseling for Abby Reason and her fiancé. And I just asked her fiancé to tell me about himself, when he came to know the Lord, and what his background was. And it was so interesting, and Rod's here, that both Abby and her fiancé, Reese, have grandparents who are first-generation believers who passed their faith on to their children, who've now passed it on to their children. And I said to Abby and Reese, I said, I'm not sure I've ever counseled a couple before marriage who are third-generation believers who love the Lord. And I said, what are you going to do with it? And that's because my goal is not that my four children know the Lord and love the Lord. My goal is that my children's children's children will love the Lord because I've passed it on. That's our goal in life. Caleb got it. How are we sharing with the next generation the truth that is paramount to them, that they wholly follow the Lord with their heart? I hope that's your goal as well. That should be our goal as a church. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you for your goodness, for your love, for this incredible example of Caleb who loved you and worked diligently to pass the truth on to his daughter, to his generations. I pray that we would do the same. Lord, Caleb had no advanced degrees in Bible, no excellent skills as a businessman. He simply trusted that what you promised would come to pass. He understood your character, your nature, and that changed him. And I pray the same would be true of us. Lord, that by faith we would live victoriously and we would build homes where not just our children, but our children's children will honor and glorify your name. We thank you for this example of Caleb. He stands as a bright, brilliant light in the book of Judges, as one who did it well. And I pray that we would learn from this study, and as a result, our faith would increase. We pray this in Christ's precious name. Amen.